Have you ever been scrolling Instagram before and see a picture where it looks like plants are planted in Cocoa Puffs, like little brown balls or like gravel? Maybe as you've been scrolling, you've seen the words semi-hydro or passive hydroponics. Well, today's episode is a deep dive in the art of growing plants hydroponically. But specifically semi-hydroponically. We'll dive into what that means in the episode. This is a way back when episode with Kay from Inrooted Love as part of the Best of Growing Joy series, because more and more people are moving to soil-free growing methods. And I thought this would be a really interesting conversation to revisit for anyone who might be interested in taking their own soil-free semi-hydroponic journey themselves. I'll share a little bit about my experience growing in LECA at the end of this episode, because it's been several years since I did this interview. I've had a long LECA journey, and I'll give you an update at the end.
Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants.
Hey, thank you for coming to the podcast and demystifying what the heck semi-hydro is for us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to share our experience with semi-hydro.
Oh man, I've been so confused by the whole thing, and I'm so curious about your journey. So to start off, how did you become the plant lady you are, and what made you decide to transition to an entire semi-hydro plant fam?
So my oldest son actually re-sparked my interest in plants. In college, I was a serial orchid killer. Like, each orchid met its demise from my ice cube watering, which is so bad, I know. And also just my complete lack of understanding that every species requires different care. So fast forward to about a year and a half ago, we were walking around Newport, Rhode Island after dinner, and we stopped by this gorgeous garden shop for the first time. And my son's eyes just lit up with all of the plants in there. And I noticed that they do workshops. And this was about 9 months post baby number two. So, you know, my husband and I were always looking for opportunities to do activities with him just one-on-one. And I thought that this would be a really great activity for us. You know, he's always been very creative, and, you know, he's always like looking over my shoulder when I'm working at my desk. So we figured, you know, this would be really fun. It'd be a fun and creative way for us to, you know, spend time together and get our hands dirty. And he loved it. Oh my gosh. He was so enthusiastic about the entire experience. And seeing that, you know, it really sparked my interest in bringing more plants into the home. So I found myself going through Instagram, and this was before I had Inrooted Love. I was just looking at different plant posts, looking for inspiration, trying to learn about plant care. And then a few weeks later, we went and took another workshop, a Kokodama workshop. And, you know, that really just like took it to a whole nother level for us, because we just wanted to Kokodama everything. And yeah, the research continued. And then I came across an account. It's at DE Little Jungle. And I saw that she was growing plants in soil-free mediums. And some of it was in semi-hydro. Others, you know, it was just using soil-free substrates. So I reached out to her and I asked, you know, I asked about it. I tried to learn as much as I could from her, and that just led me to the rabbit hole. And since then, I've just fallen deeper and deeper into it. And here we are now, 100 liters of LECA and just too many plants to count later. And we have this beautiful collection here at home that is mostly maintained in semi-hydro.
So number one, we're going to get to LECA, L-E-C-A, whatever those Cocoa Puffs everybody's posting about on Instagram. You have like fancy plants. You don't have like, I'm a person who has a lot of snake plants, philodendrons, like a lot of hardy stuff. Like, you have rare and exotic orchids and Hoyas. And for those of you who aren't following Kay at Inrooted Love, you must, because you're just, your plant collection is unbelievable. What would you say were like the alluring parts of semi-hydro that drew you to that?
So first, I didn't want to have dirt in the house. I don't know. It's just a weird thing for me. just, you know, whenever you have to go and water it, dirt gets everywhere. It could, I don't know. And then I also thought about the pest control side of things. And, you know, up until about a year and a half ago, we didn't have houseplants just because I didn't want to deal with the dirt and the pests and everything that I thought came with houseplants. It was just a very negative preconception that I had with houseplants. So learning that growing plants in inorganic soil-free mediums, it kind of, you know, it opened my eyes to this possibility of bringing plants in and, you know, maybe being able to grow things unconventionally, not the way, you know, everybody else does. And I mean, it works for us. I know it's, you know, I know it doesn't work for everyone. And I'm sure it sounds really weird to take this beautiful plant that in the wild grows, you know, off a tree or in the ground, surrounded by dirt, and then to bring it into our home and almost have it in a sterile environment.
Yeah, but I'm sure that having a soil-free home for a lot of people is probably really appealing. So let's just start off. What is semi-hydro? What requires something to be semi-hydro?
Okay, so simply put, and I know I may annoy some people with my opinion on this, but semi-hydro to me is a really great buzzword for what is actually better described as passive hydroponics. And what is passive hydroponics? It is a hydroponic method of growing that uses an inorganic, inert, porous medium, such as LECA or those cocoa puffs, and it relies on capillary action to move water and nutrients from the water reservoir to the plants by the medium and the roots.
Like this inorganic, inert medium is what's wicking the water up to bring the water to the plant's roots.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's exactly it. And it differs from other forms of hydroponics because of the absence of the use of pumps to move water and nutrient solution and also to oxygenate the reservoir. It's not actively doing these things, but rather it's passively doing it.
So it's passive because there's no pump. So there's no like electric pump that's working. It's passive just using, what's it called? Capillary action, just the wicking up of water. Gotcha.
That's it. I used to think it was a lot more complicated than that. And this is why I struggle with the term semi-hydro, because for the longest time I used it and I could never explain what made it semi. And then, you know, I talked to a few folks who grow hydroponically and we agreed that passive hydro, you know, the description is right there. It passively grows. And, it, you know, it's not relying on these pumps to move nutrients, water, and air through the system.
Okay, so what the heck are these LECA balls? L-E-C-A. These are the cocoa puffs. I feel like when I associate, you know, semi-hydro feels intimidating to me, but it is something I see on Instagram a lot. And I see these little balls, like Alessia from Apartment Botanist uses them. I've seen Christine from Work Hard Plant Hard use them. And they just look like little cocoa puff, little like brown balls that their plants seem to be buried in. So is that like the main medium used in semi-hydro? And what are they?
So yes, it definitely is the most commonly used medium. And LECA stands for lightweight expanded clay aggregate, or you know, you just call them clay balls. And what it is small balls of clay that are heated to a very high temperature. We're talking 2,190 degrees Fahrenheit high, and it's heated up in a rotary kiln. So the yielding gases then expand the clay by thousands of tiny bubbles, which is what makes it so porous. And its spherical shape comes from that circular movement in the kiln. And LECA can come in different sizes, and it can also be found in more organically shaped blobs versus the near perfect balls that we, you know, that we more commonly see.
So are those clay balls absorbing the water, or are they like sitting in the water? Like, how does it work? What does a setup look like?
So your typical setup, very simply put, you've got your plant that is in some kind of pot, a container. It could be a net pot. It could be a closed container. And rather than using, you know, like bark or soil as your medium, you'd only use the LECA. And because the bottom one third of the medium height is filled with water or your nutrient solution, you've got that bottom layer that's absorbing water. And the roots or the plants then work with the LECA and with its roots to just pull that water and nutrients as it needs it.
Are the roots of that plant in the top two thirds of the LECA balls that are not submerged in water, or are the roots actually going into the one third of the bottom that has water in it?
So the plants work with the media that's around it or the LECA, and using its roots, it just pulls all the water and the nutrients that it needs via capillary action.
Okay.
When you first convert a plant or when you first pot one into a semi-hydro format, the roots will be above that one-third line or that one-third marker. But over time, because, you know, roots will travel to where the water is, where the nutrients are, you will find that the roots can travel down into your reservoir. And I have not seen any issues with my plants, at least, you know, when it's sitting in the water, because these roots are different from soil roots in that it can tolerate being around moisture a lot more than, say, soil roots could.
So I'm really struggling to wrap my head around this. So the LECA balls on the bottom third, they're covered in water. They're obviously totally saturated. Now, since the LECA balls on top of that that aren't in water, are they pulling water up? Like, are the LECA balls on the top still damp and they're giving the top roots water as well and nutrients? Or is it that those top two thirds are dry and then the bottom third is wet?
So the top two thirds are, they stay moist.
They do.
Because the LECA is porous with the moisture, you know, being present there, it pulls it through the LECA.
Got it. Okay, so the whole root system of the plant is accessing the water it needs from either the supersaturated LECA at the bottom or the semi-saturated LECA at the top.
Yes. And I do have to point out, though, that how moist that top layer of LECA will be is, you know, it's very dependent on a few conditions. So first off, like how established your root system is. If you have roots that, you know, are just, it's taken over the pot and you've got some that are closer to the surface, those roots assist in pulling water and nutrients up to that top layer. But if it's like, if it's a cutting and you've only got roots just at the bottom, then you'll find that that top layer of LECA will probably be a little more dry than more established plants. And I'm not sure, because we don't use humidifiers for the plants here, but I would assume that with a humidifier present, it would also help to maintain some moisture on that top level.
Okay. I have a million questions for you. So what happens when, are you buying all of your plants bare rooted, or can you go to a plant shop and then you wash all the soil off? Like, how do you transition the plants that you bring home?
Oh man, I wish I could buy plants bare rooted. That would make this so much easier for me. But no, so actually my process, and those who are, you know, a little closer to me on Plantstagram know that I put my plants through a tremendous amount of stress when I convert them. Okay. Like my process, yeah, I'll walk you through it, but I'll take the plant outside, like to our backyard. And first thing, I'll hose it down, you know, get any dust or anything off of that. And then I'll switch over to the jet setting on the garden hose and actually blast the roots to knock off all the soil. And I do this because, you know, it's very important to get as much soil as you can off of the roots. The less amount of organic matter that you have on the roots, the less likely you're going to see potential issues with root rot or any like bacterial issues in the coming weeks after you've converted the plant. And sometimes I'll even take like a soft bristled toothbrush and I'll brush those little roots just to make sure we get it all off.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, I try to get as much off as I can right on the forefront, because sometimes I just don't have time to do damage control. And I would hate to see a plant die on my watch because I didn't take the time to just do it right the first time. And then after I've knocked off all the soil and as much as I could get off there, then I do just an Azomax bath for the entire plant, foliage, roots, everything. It's soaked in Azomax for about 30 minutes. That's just...
And what's Azomax?
Azomax is, I love it. I think it's probably the greatest pest management option that I've used. And it is derived from the neem plant, similar to neem oil, but sorry, I wouldn't be able to explain the science behind Azomax and how it works.
That's okay. So it's pest control. Yeah. It's a liquid pest control solution that you're soaking the plants in.
Yes. So I just take that and I, you know, I follow directions on the box for how much to dilute it, for how much water I'm using. And I just let it soak in there for about 30 minutes at least. And that'll help just kill anything that I didn't see when I was rinsing the plants off. And Azomax also works great as a preventative. It works as a systemic as well. The plants are able to absorb the Azomax. So, you know, I use it at the beginning of any conversion, but I also use it as a preventative, a routine preventative throughout the year. Now, after it's been soaking for a while, then, you know, I'll just give it a little shake to sort of dry it. And then we go on to potting it. Now, the size of the vessel that I'll use is dependent on how much of the roots are viable. I'll go in and I'll trim off any roots that just don't look like they're healthy, because there's no point in keeping them there. If they're not viable, then they're just going to rot in your new system. And then you have to worry about bacterial issues and fungal issues. So I'll fill the net pot about one third of the way up with LECA, and then I'll place the plant in there and just fill in the rest of the space with LECA. You know, every now and then I'll give it a nice little tap on the side or a little shake just to assist the LECA in getting in between all those roots to help with stabilizing it. Sometimes you'll have to provide support if there just aren't that many roots to, you know, start off with. But soon, you know, once your plant is established into your new semi-hydro system, it'll hold on to the LECA and just kind of cling on to everything around it and stabilize itself.
Right, because you can't pack the soil down to stand the plant kind of upright.
Right.
And those LECA balls, like, you can't really pack them in. For those who don't know, what's a net pot that you were saying you use?
Oh, so a net pot, it's a hydroponic staple. They use it, it looks like a normal pot, but instead of being solid all the way around, it's more like a net. It's got slits that go all the way around it. And this just allows for better airflow and also for, you know, better contact with your nutrient solution.
Okay. So you're getting all the soil off the plant. You're then soaking it in your pest control solution. You like Azomax for a half an hour. And then you're slowly potting up the plant in LECA by doing a third at the bottom and then putting the bottom of the plant roots and slowly kind of backfilling the LECA balls in there.
Exactly.
Okay. This is just so funny to me because I feel like when you're dealing with soil, everybody's like, bring the plant home. It's going to be stressed. Like, let it sit for a few days before you even repot it. Like, when you repot it, like, don't disturb the root structure too much. And you're like taking a toothbrush to the roots. It's like so opposite of, I feel like, what we're told as like normal soil plant parents.
Well, I mean, I should note that if you're going to put the plant under that amount of stress, regardless of what the planting medium is, I think that it's just very important to have a space prepared for it to go afterwards where it has the ideal conditions to recover. So although I put it through so much stress,
right,
you know, for the most part, like, I'm confident that I won't have to do any damage control or, you know, maybe a little bit after the fact because, you know, we've got ideal lighting for that particular species. If humidity is an issue, like, I'll usually keep it in an enclosed container while it's just trying to establish itself and, you know, rebound, and then slowly remove these, you know, fancy little things that it needs until it can acclimate to living in our ambient conditions here at home.
Wow. Okay. So that's what you're doing to get the plant established. So now once the plant's established and in the LECA and it's standing upright and its roots are growing, now obviously the LECA is inorganic and there's no nutrient value in there. So I would imagine that you are having to deal with all of the nutrients for the plant in the way you water it. So what does that look like? How do you fertilize and how do you water? Like, because I guess you have the water reservoir, but what does that look like with semi-hydro?
Actually, so we're going to take just a couple steps back before it even becomes established. You know, it is expected that you may lose and shed some of those old soil roots, and that's perfectly normal. That's totally fine, so long as your plant still looks healthy and it's growing new roots. Now, because we are shedding these old roots, it's very important that, you know, you stay on top of doing thorough flushes of your entire system just for the first few weeks, so that you're not, you know, harboring this environment where bacteria can just grow and just take over your plant. And that could be something as simple as, you know, once a week, if you're using a net pot, just hold it under the sink, let the water run through it for like about a minute, or until you see that there aren't any like little chunks or plant waste that's flushing out of there.
Like dead roots and stuff.
Exactly. And, you know, you could even unpot the plant. And I know, like, this sounds crazy, right? Like, you just put it through all this stress and now you're going to unpot it and repot it again. But, you know, you could totally unpot the plant, just being super careful about everything and just examining what the root zone health looks like and, you know, trimming off any old or dead material and then carefully repotting it again. You know, I do this cycle for probably about like the first 2 months just to make sure that everything looks healthy and, you know, we don't have any rotting issues going on. But once it is established, then care is just super easy, even with this crazy chemistry that you quote unquote have to do for nutrients. And so for me, my schedule is once a month, I refresh the reservoir with new nutrient solution. And what I'm putting in there is dependent on two things, the seasons, but also what stage of growth that particular plant is in. And when I say stage of growth, you know, it's either going to be vegetative, reproductive, or they're just in a dormancy period. And for me, it's easier for me to see that with the plants that I grow, because as you mentioned earlier, I grow primarily Hoyas and orchids. So there are these, you know, definite stages that you can see. If they're not blooming, but they're pushing out a ton of new leaves, then they're in vegetative growth. And based on that, then I'll look at I use Fox Farms nutrient solution. I'll look at their schedule for what to feed and how much to feed. And I follow that just very loosely. So if the plant is in a vegetative state of growth, then I'll mix up a solution that's higher in nitrogen to better support all that beautiful green growth. Now, if I see that, you know, peduncles are starting to form or we've got bloom spikes starting to form, then I'll start increasing the phosphorus in that solution so that I can better support these blooms and give the plant what it needs to be able to ultimately bloom for me.
Wow. So you're like a little mad scientist. So do you buy does Fox Farms make pure nitrogen and pure phosphorus and you're mixing it up?
They don't. So they have a huge line of different fertilizers and nutrients, but you know, their very simple one is just, it's a three series set. And the bottles themselves are formulated for these different stages of growth. So you've got one that's for big bloom, one for big growth. And then the other one is, I think it's called Tiger Bloom, which is really just to like pack that extra punch to give you these huge blooms and make them last a little bit longer. And I just base, you know, the ratios of what I'm using on what the plant's doing.
You're not like hand mixing each. No. You're just choosing Fox Farms, like bloom, like I'm an Espoma girl, but they have a bloom and a grow and they have different fertilizers, very similar. So you have a bloom Fox Farm and a grow Fox Farm, and those are mixed differently, more phosphorus heavy, more nitrogen heavy.
Yes, exactly.
Up and ask you a couple of follow-up questions. Course. So number one, let's just talk reservoir. So number one, if you're flushing plants, it must be very important that the LECA setup is in a pot that has drainage so you can flush that.
Yes, it makes it so much easier, but it also isn't necessary to use a net pot. Use just a nursery pot and that has drainage holes in it, right? Actually, wouldn't use terracotta just because I've seen like sludge grow on the side of terracotta when it's in a constant moisture, but it also wicks. It has, you know, that wicking ability. So I think your reservoir the level may go down a lot faster using terracotta.
Okay. So a more sterile, non-porous plastic type or metal, like the net pots are usually made of metal.
Actually, I use all plastic.
Use all plastic. Okay.
Yeah.
And then so you're potting everything in the net pot or the pot that's flushable. And then depending on the style of your home, you can get a cash pot that doesn't have drainage. That's the quote unquote reservoir that you're sticking that net pot in and putting the bottom third submerged in the water.
Yes. There's also another setup that you could use, which is called a closed container setup. And it could be something as simple as a cup that you have sitting around or even a mason jar. And there's two ways you could do this. One, you could just use it as is. And when you do these flushes, you just keep your fingers up at the top so that not all the LECA pours out when you pour it over, and just flush it a few times. Fill it up, pour it out, and that's fine. That'll work. Or you could take a diamond drill bit and you could actually drill holes into the glass. Say like if you're using a mason jar, just drill holes at about one third of where the medium height would be, and you just fill it up. And that's it. It'll drain out there. And then whatever's left over, that's your reservoir.
Okay, wait, you got to walk me through that again. You lost me.
I know. So say you have a glass vessel.
Okay.
If you
with
take
no
a diamond,
holes at the bottom.
No holes or anything like that. You could drill a hole with a diamond drill bit, just about like one third, maybe a little higher up from the bottom, and then just plant as you normally would. So when you do your flushes, you know, you can fill up that entire vessel with water. And because you have that hole in place at one third the medium height, the overflow just drains. So you're able to do your flushes. You're able to fill your reservoir without disturbing the plant.
My God, that's so smart. So that mason jar is going to be filled 1/3 with the water at the bottom. When you want to flush it, you fill the mason jar to the top. And because that hole is right above where the reservoir line is, that top 2/3 is going to just drain out the hole. And then that reservoir is going to remain intact because the hole is above it.
Yes.
Well, you're smart, Kay.
Oh, I wish I thought of this, but it's all on. I learned from others.
That's really cool. Okay. So you're only, and with the reservoir, once a month, do you dump whatever reservoir you have, like whatever water is left over, and then you just completely replace with fresh water with a fresh nutrient mix?
I do. Yes. Just because, you know, some of that nutrient solution, because I am using Fox Farm, some of the sediment will settle at the bottom. So I'll give the reservoir just a good rinse, sometimes, you know, scrub it down and then just refresh everything.
And do you ever get worried? One of our Patreon supporters, Megan, was wondering, what about bacteria and algae developing in the water? Do you ever get nervous about that?
Nervous? No, but does it happen? Absolutely. So with, you know, the bacterial issue, regular flushings will help minimize any of that. You know, as long as you're taking cues from your plants and you're keeping mm-hmm. to a schedule in regards to flushing, then that shouldn't be an issue. As far as algae is concerned, now that becomes an issue when you're using a non-opaque container. So for instance, say a mason jar, and you have it sitting on a windowsill, you're going to form algae there. And you can't avoid it. It's going to happen. But
because the sun instigates it?
Yes, that darn okay. sun. But yes, it's going to grow. You know, you could unpot and just clean it out. Izan 20 is really great at knocking off algae from any surface. So you could use that. You could just soak it in Izan 20 and then it just comes right off. Or you could just slip that into a container that's opaque where the sun can't get to it. And then it's not an issue.
Okay. So what about pH? I feel like a lot of people wrote in with questions about pH versus nutrients and how important pH is with passive hydro.
Okay. So I don't monitor or adjust pH for our plants. And I'll tell you why. Because my plants have not indicated that they are under any stress. So I just haven't felt the need to do it. I've seen that, you know, the tap that we use here, it's been going well for our plants. So I haven't really felt the need to add that extra step. However, mm-hmm. if you live in an area where your tap water just isn't ideal, then yes, monitoring your pH and adjusting your pH may be necessary to ensure that your plant is able to uptake those nutrients.
And is there like a kit you buy?
There is. Yeah, you could. General Hydroponics makes it super easy. They have this complete kit that includes a pH indicator fluid. So you can just test your water with that. You just put a couple drops of that in there and it'll turn a color and you match it to the label and see what pH that the water or the solution is at that moment.
Okay.
And then it also includes pH up and pH down. And depending on where your pH sits, you just adjust until you're at 6. 6 is about the ideal zone that you want to be in for pH. Then once you know how much you have to add, then, you know, you just do it at a larger scale for whatever you're using to refill your reservoir.
This conversation is like blowing my mind. It's just so different than what I've learned and who I am as a plant parent. And I'm so thankful that you're sharing this with me because I'm thinking like, number one, it's very interesting. It sounds like you do a lot of work up front to then not really do much work in the long run. Like you're not even watering your plants once a week. Like you're changing the water once a month. So part of me is like, okay, who is this technique right for? Maybe it is right for people who travel at more low maintenance because you can leave for a month and have your plants be okay. But you do need to do that work up front. And the other thing is like, if you like loved science kits as a child, like, or if you have kids who like science kits, like this is really interesting because you are getting the Azomax to soak the plants in and maybe you're testing your pH and maybe you're, you know, using different solutions for different fertilizers for different points of the stage. Like it sounds like if you like the science and if you like tinkering with stuff, like this could be a great lifestyle for you.
Totally. So actually, fun fact about it, the terms semi-hydro and semi-hydroponics were actually trademarked by a man named Ray Barkalow, who is believed in some circles, primarily in the orchid world, to have pioneered this method of growing as a way for him to maintain his orchids while he was away for business travels.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, you definitely hit the nail on the head when, you know, you said that this might be a great option for folks who are in and out or who travel often. I know, like, getting a plant sitter to just come and top off the water levels is a lot easier for me to wrap my head around than trying to instruct someone how to water or how to test, like, does this plant need to be watered? Does this one need to dry off a little more? Like, it makes water management almost non-existent for the plant grower.
Right. So if I wanted to get started, I am a low maintenance plant parent. As I said, I have snake plants and philodendrons, and I'm watering once a week the majority of my plants. And then I have my few plants I check in with on a daily basis or semi-daily basis. So you're mentioning a lot of steps, but for someone who may be intimidated by that, you know, can I just order the LECA online and I have a net pot and, like, I have one orchid that I've been resuscitating for what feels like 2 years. I've never gotten it to bloom, but can I put the orchid in LECA, put it in a reservoir, and, like, I have orchid fertilizer that I never use, but I could use the orchid fertilizer in the reservoir. And, like, is that pretty much be a setup, or are there more steps I have to take? Like, for someone like me who's never done this before, like, what's the entry level? I want to experiment with one plant and I don't want to spend $100 testing this out. Like, how do I do that? You know what I mean?
Sure. Semi-hydro, passive hydro can be as inexpensive and as expensive as you want to make it.
That's what it sounds like. Like, it sounds like I could drop $400 really easily on these.
You could, or you could spend 80 cents.
Right.
And be good, right? So I'm willing to bet that you've got a plastic nursery pot sitting around from a previous plant purchase. Great. Check. So you've got your pot already. Mm-hmm. It's got drainage holes. You're good. I say 80 cents because, you know, you probably want to run over to your local hardware store and just grab one of those plastic saucers that they have for plants.
Oh, yeah. I've got that too.
Oh, okay. You got that. Great. So save on the 80 cents. And then the LECA, right? If you don't want to commit to a huge 50-liter bag from your local hydroponic store, most pet stores that have, like, aquariums, they'll have some form of LECA. It may not be called LECA, but they'll have it. Or even IKEA. IKEA's got them for about $6. And it's more than enough to, you know, experiment with.
Can I Amazon it?
You could totally Amazon it. Yes.
I think what I'm going to do after this conversation, if you're cool with it, sending me links to everything we've talked about, and I'll make a little Amazon storefront of all the materials we've discussed, because we have a huge list of stuff. So anyway, so I Amazon everything. I Amazon toilet paper. So I'm going to Amazon my LECA to my apartment, and that's it, because I've got the nursery pot. And then with my orchid, so I have a bottle of orchid fertilizer. So how do I know how much fertilizer to put in the water?
Generally, my rule for newly converted plants is that I actually don't put nutrients in that reservoir for the first fill. If you've got, like, Super Thrive, I'll probably just put, like, a drop of Super Thrive into the reservoir just to help it kind of recover first. But then when you start wanting to use nutrients, start off with about 1/4 of the recommended dosage. Whatever it says on the bottle, just do 1/4 of that and then mix it with, you know, however much water it tells you, and then just use that solution right there. And then over time, you can start increasing. But also, you know, keep in mind the seasons, right? We're going into fall, so I probably would not go all the way up to half strength. I would probably just maintain 1/4 strength until about spring. And then once you see growth start again, then you can start increasing your dosage.
Okay, plant friends. So by the time this episode airs, has helped me transition my orchid into semi-hydro, and you can see it, because I'm going to turn myself into a believer, even though I'm still struggling to wrap my head around this. This is exciting. So, Kay, can I ask you a couple of listener questions?
Of course.
So David, one of our Patreon supporters, wants to know what plants shouldn't be used as passive hydro.
You can grow anything in passive hydro, so long as you can provide the right conditions for that plant to thrive.
So did I see that you do citrus indoors?
I do. And it grows
semi-hydro.
It does. I don't use LECA for it. I use an inorganic premixed medium that's called Lechuza Pond, and it is made up of zeolite, pumice, and lava rock. So it's a little more dense, really gritty, but it works the same.
Like the arid soil they're going to grow in. And your citrus are happy?
They're constantly blooming. They're constantly fruiting. I have citrus all year round in the house.
So what does pest management look like? Because I know with citrus, lemony and limey have had spider mites 3 times. And part of me wonders about the soil. So what does pest management look like with semi-hydro? Do you feel like it does reduce the amount of pests that your houseplants get?
Good pest prevention practices in conjunction with growing and passive hydro culture makes pest management just a lot easier and makes a pest-free environment just that much more attainable. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, kind of like the initiation for every plant to enter our home, you know, they sit in an Azomax bath for about 30 minutes. But also once a quarter, when I go to take the plants down, give them their showers, I'll spray them down with an Azomax solution as well. And just, you know, just spray them down and inspect everything and make sure that no transient bugs have entered. But really, I think getting them right when they enter the door will be the best way to prevent them from spreading. Mm-hmm. I have too many Hoyas to to worry about, and, you know, letting in one mealy bug is, it's a really scary thought for me.
So obviously you do a lot of pest prevention at the front with the Azomax bath, with making sure there's no soil, that you're constantly flushing. But as you continue year after year, do you do more preventative pest control?
No, the only thing that I do is just that routine spray down with the Azomax once a quarter.
Okay.
And then, you know, as I'm doing like my plant walkthroughs, of course, like I'll check for the undersides of the leaves. Like I'll do spot checks just to make sure that everyone is still in good health.
Okay. And when you say once a quarter spray downs, you're not removing the plant and giving it a bath from the balls. You're just doing a leaf top spray down.
Yes. Yes. I literally will just toss them in the shower, turn it on for about 3 minutes and let it rain on top of them. Mm-hmm. And then I'll spray them down and just, you know, let them chill out for a little
bit. Let them drip dry.
Yes.
Okay. Cool, cool, cool. Okay. We do that too with our soil, but I would imagine it's a lot cleaner in your bathtub.
Yes.
Without, because there's always so much. Billy gets so mad at me because there's always soil in the bathtub when I do that. Mm-hmm. He's like, you're a maniac. Oh, here's a question. Moss poles. You have your plants on a lot of moss poles. How do you keep those wet?
So for the plants that are climbing up their moss poles, I like to just bring them into the shower every like 10 to 14 days and just, you know, give them a good shower. And that usually like that'll rehydrate it. And then I actually send my little one, like my 2-year-old, around the house with a spray bottle. And he knows, just spray the moss poles.
Okay, so there's no passive hydroponic. You're not like putting the moss pole deep enough in the water reservoir that the moss is sitting in the water and waking
up. No, you know, I've been toying around with this idea for a while and I'm trying to think of a way that maintains that sterile environment yet allows some form of wicking to the moss pole. And I promise if I ever come up with anything that's an even like okay idea, I'll let you know.
You know what I was thinking? Because a listener wrote this in and it was just making me think, what if when you made your moss pole, you ran string along the moss pole under the moss?
That's
and then
genius.
That string sits in the reservoir, but that string is going to be damp all the way up the moss pole.
Actually.
And then maybe that.
Yeah.
That's, but I feel like you would need a lot of string to effectively have the moisture off of that little string moisten all of the moss around a moss pole.
That's actually a great idea. One form of passive hydro is using a self-watering wicking system. And you could totally DIY this if you go to your local craft store and you grab a synthetic yarn, like say something made of acrylic. A lot of folks, especially orchid growers I've seen, they'll put the yarn in with the LECA around the root zone and then have it dangling down into the reservoir. So that works as like a wick to bring even more moisture up to the plant. Now, I think we could kind of use that same concept for the moss pole. And, you know, you could use like a thicker gauged yarn so that you don't have to use a ton of tiny strings. But now you have the wheels turning in my head.
Yeah. Do you suggest, are there any like foolproof starter plants for someone if they wanted to try? Or do you really feel like it can be for anyone, for someone like me? Like, would an orchid be a good way to start? Or what would be a good first time semi-hydro plant?
I think pothos is always a great option. Okay. Any of like the vining philodendrons. So, you know, like your heartleaf philodendron, that would be a great one. Monsteras, because they are just so hardy and, you know, that you can't kill them. They always come back. So, you know, if you have like a Monstera cutting or even, you know, a young plant, even an old one, I got this huge like 5-gallon pot of Monstera last Christmas, and we divided it into three, and they're all growing great in passive hydro now. But yeah, you know, you could totally, I think monsteras are great. For orchids, I think the moth orchid or the Phalaenopsis is a really great option, just because in its natural environment, it's epiphytic. So you'll have, you know, your roots that are clinging on to the LECA underneath, and those roots will then adapt to be around moisture. But then you'll also have your aerial roots that are growing around it as well, that will also, you know, pull moisture from the air. And I know folks have had great success with growing Phalaenopsis, either in full water culture or passive hydro culture.
Wow. Okay. And I'm going to try that.
Definitely. Yeah. I think it'll be a fun experiment.
And Hoyas, because you're the Hoya queen.
No, I am not. I just really love Hoyas.
You love Hoyas. You have a beautiful Hoya collection.
Yeah.
So if people want to see your journey and learn more from you, because there is so much we can learn from you, where can we find you?
I am at Enrooted Love on Instagram.
At Enrooted Love. Go check her out. Give her a follow. Your plants look so happy, and you do have some cool semi-hydro stuff on your Instagram. And also you can check the show notes to this blog where we'll have some photos of Kay and her plants. Thank you so much for all of this information, Kay. And can I ask, I used to ask this question all the time and I've stopped lately because I've had so many repeat guests, but you're a newbie. So why is it important, I guess, through your lens, for people to try semi-hydro?
You know, I think it's just a very fun experiment. And, you know, if you find out that it's not for you, then that's okay. But it started off as just a big experiment for me to see if we could actually grow them in a sterile environment. And now it's just, it's the only way that I can imagine growing plants in our home. I don't think it's for everyone, but I think everyone should at least give it a try and, you know, just see what it's about.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited. I mean, not that I'm even a non-believer. It's just that I haven't been able to wrap my head around it. But what better way to wrap your head around something than giving it a try? So I am excited with your help to convert my orchid, and we will go from there. So stay tuned on both of our Instagram accounts for our adventures in semi-hydro.
Thank you so much for having me, Rhea. I really appreciate the opportunity to share our experience, and this has been really fun.
All right. Thank you so much, Kay. You can go find her at Enrooted Love. She is such a cutie, such a dear friend, such a sweetheart. I just wanted to say, after this episode, got very inspired and did transfer a few of my plants into semi-hydro with LECA. I had a really interesting experience with it. Now, this was several years ago. For me, this method doesn't work, not because it doesn't work. This method works really well. Kay's collection is a testament to it. I know plenty of people who grow in this method of the semi-hydro method or passive hydroponically. But for me, what I found is if only a few of my plants were in passive hydroponics, because I was watering the rest of my plants, I would forget to refill the reservoirs. So then the reservoirs would dry out. I would not have water in the reservoirs, and then those plants would dry out. So for me, I never got the hang of having plants in a different array of growing media, because the majority of my plants were in soil and I wasn't going to do that transfer. So anyway, that's just a little bit for me. If you're a low maintenance plant parent, passive hydroponics could work great for you, but I would say you probably want to put like either all of your plants in passive hydroponics or just all of your plants in self-watering planters, whatever works for you. So anyway, just wanted to give you that insight. It's not for everyone, but it really works so well for people who it works well for, if that makes sense. Obviously, Kay being one of them. So go check her out if you're interested in more information on semi-hydro. And really, this episode and all of these kind of exploratory growing media conversations, like there's no right way to have plants. You just have to figure out how you can have plants in your home successfully in the easiest, most stress-free way, whether that's potting mix, LECA, Lechuza pond, sphagnum moss, kokedama. There's plenty of different ways you can have plants. I don't really care how you do it, as long as you do it so you can benefit from growing joy with them. So with that, my plant friends, keep growing joy. Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey.
If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media, on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy.